Welcome to Alchemical Dialogues, an Amber Light podcast. Join Dr. Henry Critella and Dr. Cheryl Tisler for their discussion on A Personal Journey into Holistic Psychiatry. The information provided on this website and these podcasts is for informational purposes only. Nothing on this website and in these podcasts is intended to be a substitute for medical, health, therapeutic, diagnosis, or treatment. The opinions expressed by the guests in these podcasts are not necessarily the opinions of Amber Light International and anyone associated with this organization.
Thank you, Louise. Welcome, everyone. Today, we're going to be talking about holistic psychiatry with Dr. Cheryl Tisler. Hi, Cheryl.
Hello.
I can call her Cheryl because I was her training director in child psychiatry. But this is really exciting for me because when we were talking about the topic and you framed it the way you did, it just put a whole perspective on the journey you took and you're still taking into holistic psychiatry. So just to introduce people to you a little bit, Cheryl is a military child. She's the daughter of an Air Force father and originally was in Germany for a few years and came to the States. Her father was still part of the military. She was in Washington State and then went to Utah, completed high school there, and then college at Weber State College, where she received She got a BS in microbiology with a minor in mathematics and chemistry. Then she goes on to medical school, where she took an archaeology field class. That just blows my mind. I had enough trouble digging through medical school without going on a real archaeology expedition. You didn't say where that was, though. Was that in Utah?
Yes.
It was in Utah. And then she came to Rochester, New York, where she did her general and child residency training at the University of Rochester. And she pointed out that Rochester in those days was known for biopsychosocial medicine. And that was spearheaded by George Engel and John Romano. George Engel, I think he was still working there when you trained, right? He may have retired.
He may have retired.
Yeah, but it still had a history and a commitment to biopsychosocial medicine. So then she went into practice and was in Canandaigua, New York, a suburb of Rochester, worked in mental health centers, had a private practice for about 10 years, not only saw patients, but helped train people and collaborated with nurse practitioners, one of the first people to do that back in those days. She worked in substance abuse programs with the developmentally disabled, and she continued her hobbies that she had started in childhood with gardening, floral arrangement. She's a hiker, camper, sews into many arts and crafts, cross-country skiing, so really into a lot of things in nature. She didn't continue her private practice and worked primarily in a clinic for 3 years after that. And that's where she noticed the effect this stress was having in an unsupportive environment on her patients, and I believe as well as on herself. And worked with a lot of holistic approaches when allopathic, both MD and DO approaches, didn't work very well. And then something was missing, she said, with her patients. And she explored intuitively and with some training, spiritual and natural remedies, and started putting it all together, and did some rather extensive training in integrative psychiatry. She completed a master's class and training in 2016 in Colorado in integrative psychiatry, took courses through Harvard in mind-body medicine and natural alternatives to psychiatry, integrative medicine for mental health, and has continued to learn in that area and integrated it all, and has this interesting, holistic, unique approach. That's just fascinating to me. I'm a pretty allopathic physician, And I did training like you did. I did it through Jim Gordon out of Georgetown, or I think it was Georgetown, in mind-body medicine. But I never took the next step. I did some training through Harvard courses, but I just can't get the non-psychiatric stuff down, like supplements or nutrition. So Cheryl has become my go-to person. And what I love about her is she's still evidence-based. Not as bad as, that's a bad phrase for me these days, but I believe in some of that. So I go to her because she can tell the stuff that doesn't make sense from the stuff that does, but just isn't fitting into mainstream medicine or psychiatry. Cheryl, I thought we would start after that introduction with, before you talk about your personal journey, what's your definition of holistic psychiatry?
Holistic psychiatry is basically, or at least the way I use it with integrative psychiatry. Integrative, I'm taking all the natural alternatives, what used to be alternatives, now are actually a little more mainstream, and I'm combining them with all the conventional. So I have the combination of both the whole person, the supplements, the diet, the spiritual, basically anything that's kind of booming on the in the online business right now, with conventional psychiatry, which is psychotherapy, medication, a little bit of labs on thyroid, glucose, but not much else than that. And basically, I combine the two together. What that means is sometimes I'll use both, and sometimes someone will prefer just the natural, and someone will prefer just the, you know, the allopathic, the conventional psychiatry. Although I do sometimes say, well, why are you seeing me if you want to do just the conventional? Because there's a lot of people that are doing it that way. But the holistic is also a different, combining two different philosophies. Holistic is more on focus on wellness, which is not a focus in conventional. Conventional is focused on disease and suppressing disease. Holistic is talking about the body knows how to heal itself if it's in balance. And so the holistic is working for the root, looking for the root causes, and then trying to basically plug up those holes. So holistic is kind of, it encompasses many different things, but if you think about it, it's more of trying to bring back the body to its natural state using the combination of both of supplements, nutrition, looking for other physical causes, which are in the environmental, the endocrine, the more biochemical, going a little bit more in depth than what goes on in conventional. So long story.
Well, one part you said when we were talking was that in the stressful clinic where you were working, that you noticed that some people could get back partway to their baseline or toward wellness, but something was missing. And you started to ask questions like, who are you? Why are you here? Things about what's their purpose, a very spiritual approach. And you notice a really significant change. So can you talk a little about that?
When I spent about 20 years just basically using the diagnostic, putting people in categories, putting them on medication, doing some psychotherapy, having others do the psychotherapy. And I was finding that even when they should have been back to their baseline, many were not. I would say something like, what percentage are you back to where you used to be? I would get things like 80%, 90%, not quite back there yet. And so then I would start opening up some questions, because at the time I was actually exploring my spiritual path, was reading a lot of books. And so I would find out if they had any either religion or spiritual path, and ask them questions like, you know, these are the usual questions. Who am I? Why am I here? What's my purpose? What's my passion? And I would try to, if they can't figure out what their passion is, I'll say, what was your passion when you were in third grade? What'd you want to be when you grow up? And a lot of times that would spark something and they would actually get to that 100% and actually better than they were before they came. Some of the books that I would read, I'd start recommending to them, and I started getting one person would tell her mother and her sister, and then they would tell their friends, and all of a sudden all these people would be reading these books. And something else that would happen is I think I had two sort of columns or spiritual cases. One was a woman who was Catholic. She was depressed, had her on an antidepressant. She felt it wasn't working. She went to some kind of gathering where they kind of poof, you know, you're healed. And she came back and said, I'm healed, and didn't need to come anymore. I went, oh, okay. And that reminded me of when my grandfather was diagnosed with metastatic prostate cancer a few years after he retired. He never saw a physician his whole life. The hospital told him when he was getting his cobalt treatment that he would never leave the hospital. And he said, you can't make me stay here. And he not only left, he lived for another 3 years. So there's some kind of, there's a little bit of stubbornness, and also just what you really believe is important. And then one of my patients who happened to, she grew up in Lilydale, where there's a lot of mediums, and she never really used it, but it was starting to come through her dreams, and she would start to pick up something when she was cleaning someone's house. And she came up to me one day during our session and said, the spirits are telling me I need to tell you something. I went, oh, okay. And she said, you got to write your book. And I thought, how do you know that I was wanting to write a book? So there's just some interesting other things other than psychiatry that was starting to filter in. And when Harvard presented a alternatives in psychiatry course, I think it was over a few days, it had a lot of all these different vitamins and minerals and herbs, and they went over each one. And I was looking forward to it, but yet afterwards, what they did is each one says, no evidence, no evidence, no evidence, no evidence, and here's some evidence of something bad, and here we don't really know. And so you came out of there going, what am I supposed to do with this? So I remember just kind of coasting for a while, not knowing what to do with any of this information until much later.
I went to a few conferences like that. And I remember one of the evaluations I wrote in was, if you're going to have somebody present about integrative psychiatry, and it was vitamins and supplements like you're talking about, you should get someone who believes in it. Because the person not only was, it wasn't that they were not just giving evidence. I can take it somebody saying, well, I really believe this works, but we can't quite prove it yet. And that wasn't it. He had such disdain in his voice. And it was pretty obvious to me that I wasn't getting the whole scoop. And he didn't really believe in what he was talking about. So yeah, I've had a similar experience. So what allowed you to be open to this?
I think probably the combination of my grandfather basically going against medical prediction and living anyway. And I think even when I was sixth or seventh grade, I remember being outside and there was like this gathering, and there's this military guy sat down and started talking to me. I didn't say a word. And afterwards, he thanked me for listening to him. And I thought, this is interesting. So there was something about already being a listener.
I guess so.
And when I was in college thinking about med school, they had us volunteer. And the regular medical practices were full of volunteers. So I went over to OBGYN, and they involved me in being a chaperone, giving the instruments for the two OBGYN docs, Then I got invited to watch surgery. And so the whole summer I would watch surgery and really thought I was going to do OBGYN because what I was watching really was the nurses. The nurses, the nurse practitioners, they were the one that really got to have conversations with the patients. But when I got to about my third year of med school and did a rotation in OBGYN, there's no talking really. It's more doing procedures. And in fact, one of the docs did a procedure where she was dying and he did a surgical procedure anyway. It's like, what? And when she woke up from the surgery, she didn't want to live. And so I wasn't doing my OBGYN part. I sat and talked with her and talked with her husband and trying to get her to want to at least live for whatever lane she had left, and thought, this is ridiculous. I can't do OBGYN. So it got me at least into something where you can talk, and then realizing there's still more to it. And I think it took my own, you were talking about how when I worked for the last clinic, I had been getting patients with fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, who their docs thought were, that was all in their head. And so they, of course, that's psych. And I would see them and said, I thought, this isn't psych. I started thinking they have like end stage stress. And so they're presenting with that. And so I provided a lot of support, but I wasn't doing really psychiatry. They didn't have any mental health stuff. And then I started to develop fibromyalgia and asthma and fatigue. And I thought, uh-oh. And so that's when I had a lot of friends who were in the alternative fields, cranial sacral, massage, I think some acupuncture, naturopath. So I was starting to get into that path to try to get well, because I was basically told there was nothing you can do. And within a year, I erased my asthma, I erased my fibromyalgia, I erased the chronic fatigue, and thought, oh, okay, I need to do this with my practice if I do this again. So when I opened up my private practice again, I had to include all that, although I didn't have sort of a recipe of how to do it yet. I was just finding my way. And that's when I learned about the integrative practitioners that are here in Rochester. There's actually quite a few, and they are a part of Monroe County Medical Society. And at the time, they were putting on an integrative medicine conference once a year. And I was learning about where did these practitioners learn from. So they were telling me how to get the information. So I was kind of just pulling it together myself until I finally heard about a course in integrative medicine for mental health. And so that was one of the first ones I went to, other than another one that had maybe 2 hours of psychiatry, and it was all a little bit impossible. It wasn't really user-friendly. It's like, yeah, I'll create my own organic farm and have organic food all the time. It's like, no, sorry, guy. But when I got to the IMMH, Integrative Medicine for Mental Health, I got hit with a lot of integrative medicine, which, you know, not internal medicine, but it kind of gave a lot of alternative ideas and possible treatments. But when I turned around and tried to use it again, I couldn't figure out how to really apply it until I did the master class. That was a class where you had to actually be trying to practice this for a while before you could go into it. And it was like a bulb went off. Everything fit. I found all the evidence base for tons of herbs and vitamins and minerals and all these protocols, but it was still more biopsychosocial spiritual. And they were talking about shamanism. They were talking about psychedelic treatment with PTSD and other things that they were doing. So it was just really eye-opening. Although that master class isn't there anymore, I think they only did it for, I think it's only about 2 years that they did that. So it was, it's kind of like having to try to find all this information. But what I was positive for or hopeful for is that there was a newsletter done by a conventional psychiatrist. So for years, I've been getting that conventional newsletter. And for the last 2 years, it's been full of focuses on integrative psychiatry. It talked about inflammation being the actually probably the root cause of depression, rather than that old good old serotonin. And it had nutrition, and it had other supplements. And they were actually talking about it in ways that was fitting what I had learned. And so it's starting to filter in, but very slowly, slowly.
Yeah, I agree with you about how slow it is. I'm retired now, but before I retired, it was, like I said, it was fairly slow and it was confusing. Yeah. I think psychiatrists tended to be probably more open than some others. I think you trained at you did some training with Herb Benson's group at the Mind Body Medicine Institute. And I trained with Jim Gordon's group pretty intensively. Kathleen and I both did that. And part of what grabbed me is his first book was, it's old now, but Manifesto for a New Medicine. And it's heavily autobiographical. And it's pretty darn close to your story. And that's part of what grabbed me, is that he gave an introduction of himself. And I was reading it and I was saying, oh, this could be me. I mean, he had pretty conventional training. And it helped that he was a psychiatrist as opposed to an internal medicine doc. But similar to you, he either got in an accident or he got some sort of back injury and nothing was helping him. He would go to allopathic doctors and the usual. And then he said this very moving thing in his book for me. He said, I'm a doctor. I know what they're thinking about me. I can tell when I walk in the door. And he couldn't practice. He had to give up his hobbies like golf. And then he found an alternative practitioner, and I can't remember how he found him, but it was a pretty spiritual guy who gave him some herbs. He spent 3 days vomiting and asked him, I think he called him up and said, is this supposed to be happening? And he said, yes. And then it stopped in a few days. And little by little, and I think he was given, I can't remember this for sure now, if he was given kind of what we would call spiritual practice. Can't remember that part. But what I remember is he got back to practicing, golfing, walking, and the allopathic docs had given up on him. And he, like you, just couldn't resist exploring it more, because he said, something happened and I want to know what happened. And I want to be able to share this with the people that I work with. And so he explored it and developed his own institute. And he will use herbs and supplements and acupuncture. And he's trained in acupuncture and some Qigong techniques and things like that. So that just reminded me, what's grabbing me, my foray into mind-body medicine, again, not with the herbs and supplements and nutrition, but with some spiritual practice and stress reduction practices, those kinds of things that I could easily incorporate into my work as a psychiatrist and that I actually use in my work as a spiritual guide, because there's this huge overlap. Part of what drew me is I would be working with people and they always were expecting a pill. Even in psychotherapy, they weren't taking responsibility kind of for themselves. They wanted me to do something. And I don't think I was that kind of doctor. I mean, you know, I did think about it at the time, but I was really struck with that. And I remember I gave a little talk at Clifton Springs, where you used to work. It's a little suburb of Rochester. And they had a natural, so-called integrative program there. So I gave a talk to a small group of people. I talked about mind-body work. The naturopathic person talked about herbs and supplements. Then it came time for questions. And everybody rushed to him, insisted he had to open up the door, and they had to look at all of his herbs and supplements. And nobody wanted to talk about what could they do with their mind to alleviate their stress they wanted a pill. They just wanted, you know, it was an herb, it was a supplement, but it was still that idea of give me something to make this go away so that I don't have to be working on something. So I don't know if you found that as well.
I have found people that are so used to having a quick fix with a pill that they just want something alternative, but as a quick fix with a pill. And it's the pills aren't suppressing. There's a few herbs that will help you relax and will help with depression, but they're not really quick fixes, especially like, you know, Valium, Xanax, those kind of things. People who are so used to wanting something immediate, they're going to be very disappointed, and they're going to be taking a lot more pills, because what you're really looking for is what is going on in your body that's showing that you're not in balance. And I look for sensitivity CRP. That's a standard. It's not a usual thing that other docs even order. And it's a C-reactive protein, which is one of the ways that you can see if someone has a lot of inflammation. But there are so many other pathways for the inflammation that we can't really test for. So if it's negative, it doesn't mean you don't have inflammation. It's just if you do, and it's been chronic, it's probably an indicator of some kind of chronic illness that will probably turn into autoimmune, and we can work on it. We can work on getting an anti-inflammatory diet. We can work on some supplements, turmeric, some other things to bring down the inflammation. We can look for the resource or the sources for that inflammation, even just in some blood work. But if someone is just wanting a quick fix, they're not going to be happy about changing their diet. It's very hard. I tell them my story, you know, that was recommended gluten-free, dairy-free for, I think, probably a couple years. I ignored it until I finally got a blood test that showed antibodies against gluten and dairy. And I went, oops, I guess I will have to try this. And it was hard. And I would do it for a couple weeks and then cheat. And then I'd feel really sick. So you can't get someone to just go from 0 to 100 on a diet very quickly. And sometimes that's going to be the major route that's actually going to be very helpful. I think I had one guy, a gentleman who came who was very anxious and socially isolated, and he had high inflammation and some other indicators that I put him on an anti-inflammatory diet. His wife and he complied, and his anxiety got better, and actually his social anxiety got better. It's like that was the main step for him that actually opened him up to be balanced so that he was actually more even. Whereas if someone else did that, I might need to also correct their B12 and their folate. They might have an MTHFR polymorphism, which is fancy for their folate that they eat in their diet is not getting activated and therefore is not being utilized to make your neurotransmitters in your brain, which is why they get anxious and depressed. So I can actually show them a diagram with the amino acids that then go to the next step with these cofactors that then go to the next step, and then it goes to serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine. I forgot what the others. There's some other pathways in there that if they don't have that activated folate, it doesn't work well. And I can actually give them activated folate as a supplement, and get around that pathway that's been interfered with these SNPs, these basically kind of like genetic SNPs. But sometimes that's not the only factor, because there's some other pathways that they may have some problems in. So that simple thing may not be enough. But I've caught about a dozen people who their main enzyme that activates their folate is compromised. The genes are compromised. And when I give them high doses of folate or methylated folate and methyl B12, their depression gets better. And they're tootling along for about a year on their supplements, and then they run out. And then they say, gee, I've been depressed for the last 2 weeks, and I don't know why. And I'll say, well, what's changed? Well, I ran out of my medicine. What was it? My methylated folate. And when they put it back in, their depression goes away. Wow.
Why do you think a lot of this isn't accepted in mainstream medicine?
Because we're not taught nutrition. We're not taught vitamins, minerals, nutrition, herbs at all. And we haven't been for probably many generations. And I think because it's not in that pool of knowledge, the older docs say, if I wasn't taught it, it was ridiculous. It's not relevant. I also think there's another factor that I learned about. And there used to be homeopathic and herbology and chiropractic and all these other avenues of medicine. And when allopathic came in, they decided to make all those others not relevant and pushed them out, and basically pushed out homeopathic and herbal for years. And it's only been recently that they've come back in, but that whole mindset is still there of, that's ridiculous, it's not helpful. And for me, I don't care what the mindset is. If it's helpful and it makes someone better, I'm going to use it. Although I have to say, I'm probably watched a little more carefully because of it. There was a complaint. And so the state was investigating the complaint, and they thought, oh, what about these supplements you have in your office? It's like, that's not part of the complaint, but they were trying to get me in trouble, I guess. But I actually stopped carrying them really in my office because it was so expensive. And I found a company that has like 300 different brands in it. And I can just give a website with my name and a discount, and patients can go there and get it. Good. Sometimes they don't get it. They won't pick it up. But it's like, well, that's their issue. It's like, I don't want to go broke trying to sell them this stuff in my office.
So I want to make sure that people have a chance to ask questions or make a comment if they have any. Pafizla?
I've worn a lot of different hats over the years, and one of them fairly recently was contract medical writer in the pharma industry. So that was interesting from a lot of different perspectives, but I can kind of understand the reticence of allopaths to accept herbs and things, because it's really hard to quantify. You know, you don't necessarily know what the dosage is, and you don't have a lot of things that control-obsessed Western scientists like to have. And, you know, from that perspective, it's understandable. And I'm sure there's also some psychodynamic factors operating in the background of, you know, we want to be the experts in this, and we want to be the ones that people come to. And there's also some logic in that, because, you know, your basic herbalist is not necessarily going to be able to spot the kinds of stuff that might turn up in a, you know, in a panel. So I get that. We're also still burdened by the albatross of 19th century scientific materialism. And that's in psychiatry, and it's in conventional medicine. And I don't know how long it's going to take. I mean, people are still talking about the mind-body connection. Well, excuse me, there is no such thing. It's a unit expressing at different levels in different ways. And Just that whole dualism is something that, you know, those of us perceiving from a larger perspective and can, even if just intellectually, take in a larger view of what's happening here, it's still an uphill fight to get that into the mainstream. It's slowly happening, but it's just taking a really, really long time. And I don't know what it's going to take to make the breakthrough, just more time, probably. That's my riff.
I think there's a larger issue. So Cheryl, you can comment on this too. You know, we came into medicine when medical schools were being forced to be able to get federal funding. They had to develop a curriculum that was evidence-based. So to me, that was natural. So what you learn in the history of medicine, it was the Flexner Report. I think it was in the 1950s. Prior to that, and I actually had a physician taking care of my father who was trained back in those days, there was no quality control. So physicians were trained, a lot of it was on-the-job training. They didn't go to medical school. They were so trained so differently, and they could do kind of whatever they wanted, and there was no evidence behind it. So there was a great, and I think it was, I'm not an expert in the history of medicine, but I think there was a legitimate and necessary standardization. If you're going to be an MD, people should expect that you've had the following kind of training. And the training was supposed to be based on double-blind placebo-controlled studies, which almost doesn't exist in psychiatry. So you had to approximate that, right? And along with that came the idea that this profession, as part of its job, is to educate the public as to what's real and evidence-based and what isn't. I think one of the problems is that what's not evidence-based gets thought of as irrelevant, chicanery, quackery. Just because we don't have the technology to prove something doesn't mean it isn't working, or it doesn't mean that there's a unique response that one individual has to something. So I think kind of like medicine gets off on its high horse, that all of a sudden from standardizing and providing some quality and trying to educate the public, then they get into this massive control over what kind of research is done and what gets into a journal. And then you get into the usual publish or perish, so that researchers have openly admitted they fudge their data so that they can get, I mean, this is really scary and it's a minority, but I can't believe they actually admit it. Oh yeah, I fudged my data to get it published, but I'm sure it doesn't make any difference. So I think there's a larger issue about, you know, that's really holistic. A really holistic view is really hard because you have to look at evidence, and there are things out there that are basically quackery, like drink some bleach and you'll get rid of the COVID-19 virus. And we need some education and protection about that. But how do you do that and still keep an open mind, saying and realizing there are things we can't prove yet, but that doesn't mean they don't work? What do you think about that, Cheryl?
I know that there's actually been some studies, like a head-to-head with Prozac and turmeric, and that it has shown that turmeric at 1 gram is equivalent to Prozac at 20 milligrams. So turmeric is an effective antidepressant, but just like any antidepressant, it doesn't help everyone. It helps most people. It helps about 40-50% of the people. So even though back in 2005, there was never really any money to allow any of the vitamin, mineral, nutrition kind of thing. And plus, they always only did one thing at a time. And when you eat a meal, it's not just one little vitamin D or whatever. You're eating a whole bunch of stuff together. So a lot of the philosophy of how to do the research just doesn't work well. Yet there is research being done, and there are some really hard evidence-based facts that are coming out. But I heard someone talking about some fascinating new research, and someone said, well, how come it's not in the mainstream yet? And they said, it takes 40 years for it to come in. And they said, why? Because it takes that long for the old guard to die. So
present company,
I think it's true.
I hope. Yeah.
I think it's true. I went to a meeting. I called the kitty shrink meeting. They're all child psychiatrists that we're getting together about once a month. And we were talking about what each of us are doing. And I said what I did. And one of them said, oh, you know, tell me what's your most favorite thing to work with or to try. And I said this multi-nutrient formula that it's basically hyper multivitamin, but it's more complex than that. And it actually has been working with the emotional dysregulation that borderlines have, and there's no treatment for that in allopathic. And I have evened out the mood swings in a lot of these patients with this multi-nutrient thing. And her response was, oh, that has high vitamin D. I would never do anything with high vitamin D. That was the end of the discussion. And I've never had anyone who's doing psychiatry who was interested, except for three young nurse practitioners and the medical students at the U of R. They were interested. And they got together, about four of us that were in integrative medicine and different specialties. We did like a speed dating where each one asked us questions and went through. And they were really disappointed that they weren't getting anything of integrative medicine in medical school. So where is it going to come from? I think the younger people. And when I couldn't find anybody to teach for the last 10 years, I thought, well, I'll teach the general public, and then maybe they will actually talk to their primary care docs who might think about wanting to try to get some of this information, which is actually more readily available. And it's not just a matter of taking an herb and supplementing it for another medication. That's still allopathic. You're really
that's
treating
for another, right?
Yeah, that's treating okay. Herb as something.
Mark, do you have a question?
Do you think one of the roles of an integrative doctor should be to help empower the patient to take charge of their own health? I know that I've seen a lot of different practitioners, and ultimately, if you're trying to balance out what's working, what's not working, what feels good to your body, I began to realize over the years that I know best what to do for myself, and I learn from these different practitioners, so ultimately I can take charge. And then it's a matter of seeing these practitioners as sort of like tune-ups. I get check-in from maybe an Ayurvedic doctor quarterly during the season change, because I understand that. I was just curious what your thought was. And then also, are you using any genetic testing helping with patients?
There are some genetic testing now. In fact, there's one that's come really from a pharmaceutical company. And unfortunately, I don't like it because it will basically say which medications are causing this possible interaction. And these very expensive ones that your insurance probably won't approve are the ones that are the safest. I can't abide by that one. There's another one that also does a lot of the same. It's more of the cytochrome P450, how the medications are going to work as a guesswork. There's a lot of other ones that will look for different genetic things, although there's still a lot we don't really know. And just because you have a SNP on the gene doesn't necessarily mean that it's not functioning. If you just take care of the stresses in your environment, decrease the amount of toxins that you're eating or taking in. Basically, if you take care, if you strengthen your body, you can actually turn on and off your own genes, and you don't, it's not really the genetics that determine it. So I've kind of shifted away from some of the genetic testing, because it's really, when you're sick or when you've got certain bad foods you're eating or toxins you've accumulating or different things, it actually is what turns on and off your own genes. I focus more on trying to get people to want to kind of take care of themselves, to kind of try to take control of themselves. And it's hard. I kind of look at it as peeling an onion. When they come in, they're acutely symptomatic, and we'll work on that. I'll do a little bit of suppressing, but educating on this, and let's see what you're willing to do. And then they'll try a little bit of this, a little bit of this. Okay, I'm all right. And then they'll probably just stay there. And then as something starts to fall apart again, okay, let's go a little deeper now. And then a little deeper, because people can't do all those changes all at once. And I might, if I do recommend a bunch of supplements, because they have a lot of holes that I need to fill in, you know, like low vitamin D, low B12, low folate, low iron, high inflammation, thyroid. There's a lot of different things that all kind of come together, and low magnesium. They got a lot of pills. So the next time I see them, they're not compliant, or they're complaining about it. So I'll say, okay, how much are you willing to take right now? And I'll just keep negotiating. I'll cut it down and then add it back in when they're ready, kind of work with them. It's a matter of just, it's looking at the whole picture. And right now I heard some research from Dietrich Klinghardt, who's an MD, PhD, who's really brilliant, from Germany. And he has a clinic in Washington State. And a naturopathic physician that works for him interviewed Stephanie Seneff, who is an MIT artificial intelligence computer systems genius. And she's starting to see that there is a connection between COVID and glyphosate, which means, and it's not just a, you know, oh, they seem to be correlated. It's more that they've done the research to show that glyphosate works on the shikimate pathway in the plant and in the body. It's actually when the body is like working on COVID and doing the last Hail Mary of trying to kick out deuterium from the mitochondria so that it can function and survive, the glyphosate blocks that. And that's what's killing people. So it's actually glyphosate, which is Roundup. And Roundup is coming from GMO foods. GMO foods were altered so that they could take tons of Roundup so that they don't have to weed. Except that this stuff doesn't just come out of the plant. You can't wash it out. So you're eating it, and your body doesn't eliminate it. It stores it. And the more you store, the more trauma, you know, more problems that you get. And so who's eating this? It's in highly processed foods, the cheap foods. Guess who's going to be eating it? And I know this is still something new, but it's something that sort of fits all the pieces about how people are getting ill from COVID. So, I mean, there's things like that. And so even though I'm a psychiatrist, I've gotten involved in all this integrative medicine stuff. And I've learned the things, like you said, about the right milligram and the right quality. I actually do recommend certain qualities, certain brands. And when it comes to an herb, it's got to be a very good brand. Otherwise, you're not getting what you're supposed to. You know, usually Gaia Herb Farm, there's a few others, Wise Woman Herbals, that are safe for herbs. And there's others you could get off the shelf at Walmart, like vitamin D. Vitamin D is really deficient in so many people. Yet the allopaths have kind of kept changing the number that's like, oh, that's going to be okay. Used to be 30. Now it's 20. What happened? Why did that change? 30 was barely sufficient. 20 is deficient. And so we've got this weird game that's going on. And anyone who's learned integrative, they use a different range and they have a different milligram that they'll use and certain brands that are known to be high quality. Whereas there's a lot of people out there that can basically be making a lot of money from people who are wanting something natural, but all they're getting is twigs and, you know, weeds. I think it was some kind of government person who swooped into Rochester and a few other areas and pulled supplements off the shelves and found that I think 40% or more didn't have what they were supposed to have in it. And that makes sense to me because there's a lot of people that are con artists out there and they know a good thing. Look at the CBD explosion. I was actually getting that from Colorado in 2016, and I think I was almost the only one in Rochester that had it. And then all of a sudden the natural food place had it, and now every corner or every block you can find a CBD store. I don't trust any of those. There's only about four that the master psychiatry folks will trust that we know what's in it. It is scary, but it doesn't mean that it's not effective if you're actually using it the proper way.
Afizla, you had a follow-up?
Yeah, a couple of things. I mean, the conversation has ranged far and wide, so there's two different threads in my head. The first one being just the tendency of this society, and especially science, to view things so piecemeal. And in medicine, that makes a certain amount of sense because it's impossible for any one person to know it all, and you really need specialties. But then the specialty becomes an echo chamber, and something that may be deeply relevant to a patient's well-being is invisible because the specialist doesn't see all of the different pieces, and the general practitioner also can't really see the whole picture in a lot of ways. And somehow that ties into what, Cheryl, you were saying about glyphosate. It was originally approved because humans and vertebrates don't have the metabolic channel that glyphosate targets as an herbicide. But they actually pulled a fast one because our gut biota do. And there is so much that we're finding out now. I mean, there's just this explosion of studies and information about how the gut biome affects mood and inflammation, and it just goes on and on and on. And I'm fairly well convinced that these spikes in autism that we're seeing, aside from having different metrics and a lot better idea of what the autistic spectrum looks like and how it shows up, that the ubiquity of glyphosate and antibiotics in the food chain are really doing a number on the developmental processes of children at critical times in their nervous system development.
There actually is data that shows that glyphosate, when it was increasing, autism was increasing. And so there's a big link between the two, and just the toxins in general. I think there's a link between the toxins and glyphosate and autism and ADHD. And so there's a lot of things we don't know. There was a PhD from the U of R who gave a talk to the kitty shrink meeting that we had. And she talked about how the medications that are being used in children are altering the brain. And she actually could see it in the research she was doing. And that stayed with me, so that when I started to do just more of the integrative or natural, I didn't want to treat children anymore. I don't want to be pulled into being asked to do medications with them. I just can't. So there's just so many problems that have been created, and I don't know if there's going to be a solution, or at least not one while I'm still practicing.
Just to balance that, I mean, if you assume that there really are disorders, which I believe, I think we're overdoing it, but I think brains don't always function to maintain wellness. Sometimes medicines can actually reverse that, or at least compensate for that. So it's a little bit, I want to be careful that what I tried to do is not compare apples to oranges. It's not like normal brain, put them on medicine and screw up their brain. It's a brain that's not functioning well to begin with. And there had been some evidence that even psychotherapy, you could see better functioning in the brain, including anatomical changes, which blew my mind for people who had post-traumatic stress disorder. And it wasn't just medicine, it was also with psychotherapy. So I want to be a little careful about that it's not that medicines are always poison, because I did use a lot of medicines in my practice as a child psychiatrist. And I got to admit that some people were, I remember one young boy was still really suffering and having trouble. And I wanted to get him off some medicines that he was on. And he glared at me. And he talked about one particular medicine that had really helped him. And I said, well, I'm not talking about that one. And he said, don't you dare ever take me off of that. Because he went from basically non-functional to functional. And, you know, I have to listen to that. So I just wanted to balance that. Marianne, do you have a question?
You say just a little bit more about what you are doing with people spiritually, as well as the other work that you've been discussing.
What I do with people spiritually is I'm, even on the first appointment, I'm asking about what kind of spiritual life do they have? Is it religion? Is it, do they even believe in God? Do they have any sense of what's out there? And if they're more, you know, it's science or the universe versus they explored a few things, but they didn't like this. I try to find what they've already done and then try to challenge them with some ideas. And in coming to what is it that you wanted to be when you were younger? What did you want to do? What do you feel that you still want to do? What do you think is kind of your purpose that you've got to keep going? I had someone who is psychotically depressed, and he's been like that for, I think, a few years, and very, very depressed and basically thinks about suicide a lot, but he still wants to help people. I thought, wow. So, and he was talking about a lot of his spiritual experiences where it feels like he sort of pops into the divine for, you know, a couple of days and then kind of pops out. It's like, oh, and it wasn't dissociative and it wasn't depersonalization either. So it's kind of allowing them to have permission to talk about some of these things that they really can't with other people, and then seeing if there's something that may help them keep exploring, or, you know, trying to give them permission to keep exploring on a spiritual path, whether through books or through some other organizations. And so sometimes that's the carrot that I use. Someone came in who was so desperately suicidal, and he was able to talk about what he had wanted to be. I think he wanted to be a teacher. And so that was something that I kept in mind over the last, I think, 4 years that I've been working with him. He's no longer that destitute, but he falls off of that goal. And I say, well, is that still what you want to do? And it's keeping that part of them in mind. And the spiritual also just includes being social, getting their needs met through other people or community, especially people who are isolated.
So okay. We can touch on this, and then unfortunately we're going to have to stop. I really enjoy this. You had a really interesting personal journey when your background was just so diverse. So I'm curious about your own path, your own diversity. I mean, microbiology, chemistry, math, a little bit of archaeology, all of your outdoor activities. Then you plop into psychiatry, and then you plop into, well, you study Buddhism for a while, and now you're studying Sufism. And when you reflect on that, what comes up for you about your own journey?
What I remember is starting off as Catholic, but I lived in 3 states before I even got to Germany. So it's like Michigan, Mississippi, Ohio, then Germany, then Washington State, and somewhere in Washington State, I walked out of catechism and never went back. And I don't know why. It was already around fifth grade. I just said, I'm done. And then I went on to the science path, and it was like, I didn't really think much that there was really a God. It was just all science. And I can see now why a lot of doctors have kind of like, they don't believe in God, but they believe in, I think they're, well, there's a different version in the science world. And then I started getting into Omega Institute and started reading some books. Even Conversations with God sort of blew me away, the first book. And Brian Weiss, yeah. Many Lives, Many Masters.
Many Masters, among others.
Right. And then I was with someone who was into Buddhism, but we had like spiritual book club, and there was different explorations going on all the time. And then I got back in touch with you, and then it was exploring Sufism, and right now it's also exploring the grandmothers, the Council of the Grandmothers, which which is more of the divine, trying to bring the divine feminine back into the world. And so it's, yeah, I guess I always describe it as like a pinball machine to my patients. Some people know exactly what they want, and they go straight up through. Most people, bing, bing, you know, nope, not here, nope, not there, and eventually where they want to go. And I just keep exploring.
Yeah, but I don't know. I hear exploring with you're finding a goal. I mean, you found a niche, and I can't help thinking that, like I think Fizula mentioned about, out of necessity, we kind of have to specialize. And even when you think about it, spiritual groups have specialized. You know, there's Sufis and Buddhists and Catholics and da 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 da. But really, there's a holistic view. And I couldn't help thinking that just the gift you had, whether you liked it or not as a child, of just being forced to be so diverse and to be able to hold that. You were able to hold that and put it together and explore different places, but talk about holistic. Part of what we tried to do in Amberlight is to really, you know, you don't know what you don't know, but being able to hold an open mind. And like we said earlier, I think there is stuff out there that just isn't healthy and isn't very good and doesn't have a good intention behind it. But when you have a group of people that are really serious, you can usually sort out what's helpful. And I really love your discovery that helping people find their purpose, what their passion is, why they're living, that is so dramatically important. And you don't have to just be on a mystical path to do that. Friends can do that for each other, and doctors can help patients, and parents can help kids. And hearing that really moved me, because I found that similarly in my own life and with people that I work with. That just gives you a reason to be alive and a reason to be well and to be healthy and to move forward. So thank you for sharing that. I'm sure we could go on for 2 more hours. I am obligated to remind viewers and listeners that this was information for general discussion. It is not a prescription. Cheryl is not your doctor, and neither am I. She's not telling you what to do. this was a pretty freewheeling conversation. If you're interested, find a practitioner. Cheryl practices in Bushnell's Basin near Rochester, New York. That's not an advertisement to her. I'm just telling you that she's still practicing and she's still active in this and is still learning. Thank you very much, everybody.
If you find yourself enjoying our podcast, please do us a favor and spread the word. Tell a friend about it. Post it on social media. If you or someone you know would like to participate in a future podcast, please connect with us through the Contact Us page. See our events calendar page for dates to our next live podcast recordings. We'd love for you to participate and ask questions. Alchemical Dialogues are live and unscripted conversations recorded on Zoom, brought to you by the great folks of Amberlight International, a nonprofit organization co-founded by Henry Curtella, MD, and Kathleen Fitzpatrick, LCSW. We choose topics from our current social and cultural climate with an emphasis on humanism and spirituality.